I'm Jen Taylor Skinner, and this is The Electorate. On today's episode, I talk with comedian Allison Dorr.
Isn't that nice?
You know, I love talking to comedians, and considering the current political climate, sometimes you just need to lighten things up. Allison Dorr is a Canadian comedian, the host of not one but two shows on Sirius XM, and she also founded a female-centric comedy record label called Howl & Roar. And Allison is pretty funny, so this conversation left me in a really good mood. I wanted to talk to Allison about the comedy industry and what the climate was like for women. You know, all of those social issues that I usually like to dig into in these episodes. But the conversation turned into something a little different. Well, you know, sort of. It turned into a conversation about careers and women's professional lives and all the ways in which we internalize messaging that leads us to hold ourselves back or doubt ourselves. You know, when we tell ourselves that we shouldn't go for that promotion or that gig or that comedy special because we're not good enough or, you know, we're not ready. Here is Allison describing why she decided to start Howl & Roar and what niche it fills for both women and comedians from underrepresented groups.
Well, it's a many-layered answer. The primary thing that got me to start it was I started programming a one-hour show for a Sirius XM channel here in Canada called Canada Laughs, celebrating women in comedy. And initially, because we are on the Canadian side of the company, I was looking to do just predominantly Canadian comedians. And then I looked at the recorded material we had and was shocked at some of the prominent comedians in this country that had nothing. And then even, you know, there are a few women here that are very good about recording and getting content out there, but overall it was ridiculous. And for the men in this country, we had tons of stuff. Now there are more men than women, obviously, but even proportionally speaking, like the women just weren't recording as much as the men. And so I spent a couple of years just being mad and, you know, telling women and going into our, you know, Toronto female comic Facebook groups being like, record stuff. What's wrong with you guys? And then I think the other thing that I'm bringing that other record labels aren't necessarily, or that just comedians aren't used to, is that everyone gets the same deal. There's no different deals for different people. Everyone is treated exactly the same. And there is transparency in that they know exactly what I'm doing. If they want to see the books, they can see the books. And so it started very small in my mind, and it was just going to be something I quietly started doing. And very quickly, it snowballed. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh my God, I think I'm starting a record label. The idea started, I think, in January of 2018. And we launched in September.
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting because I understand to some extent why there are fewer women comedians, right? But these women, you know, they've demonstrated some measure of success as comedians, right? They've been successful. So why do you think that women who found success on stage aren't recording?
So the challenges that I think a lot of women have are largely because of the way women historically have been socialized. So we don't like shouting out what we're doing. We don't like, you know, saying, look at this thing I did. The way I've put it that a lot of people have seemed to feel comfortable with is when women come to a door, they wait to be invited inside. And when men come to a door, they open it and are like, hey, what's going on in here? And women seem to be waiting to be invited. And they don't feel like they don't feel like they're ready to record an album or they're good enough to record an album. And part of that also is the comedy industry. I think it feels like women have to constantly continue proving that they're funny. A big headliner in the States said this recently, and I feel very bad that I can't remember who it was, but she was saying that, like, even after 30 years and like sold out audiences, if you bomb once, people are like, man, she's not funny anymore. Whereas with men, it seems like if they have one great set, they're funny forever. And if people see them have a bad set, they're like, oh yeah, they just had a bad night. But women, it feels like you're constantly having to prove yourself over and over again. And I think that gets into our heads And we get self-conscious about the idea of approaching people and saying, like, I want to record an album, or even then putting that out and making social media posts saying, I recorded an album. Many women I've talked to have said, yeah, that's the part I don't want to do. I mean, that stuff is just deeply ingrained. And so what I do is, first of all, with many of these women, I have approached them first and said, I want to work with you. And so thereby, I'm opening the door and inviting them in. And I'm very aware of the need for reassurance. Because that's the other thing. We are female centric, but I wanted to leave some space for men of color and men in the LGBTQ plus community. And so we've had a couple of recordings with men, and they by and large don't need reassurance at the show. They don't need reassurance on the night. But women do seem to need that reminder of, this is going to be a great night. You deserve this.
Yeah. You know what I think is really interesting? You said that women, when they come through the door, they wait to be invited, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, from what I understand of your label and how you got your show on Sirius XM, do you still have the show on Sirius XM?
Yes. I actually have two shows on Sirius XM. I don't want to brag, but I have a daily talk show that I host. And then I do the weekly show that celebrates women in comedy on a different channel.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is just that you approach them, which is kind of the opposite of what you see with other women in entertainment or other women in comedy. You approach them, so you just invite yourself in, right? Well, so I think that's really interesting that you did. Or did you? I don't know.
To be fair, I was partnered with a man and he approached them.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
But so what? How do you feel about that? Do you feel like you were basically behaving like many women that you see? You know what I mean? The women that you're inviting
Absolutely.
In? Yeah.
Absolutely. I think one interviewer asked me if, because I quit performing at a stand-up about 2 years ago, but I was in it for 17 years. And so an interviewer said, do you wish your label had been around when you were doing stand-up? And I said, you know what? I don't even think I would have approached a label like mine. I think because I lived in that, am I good enough mentality as a comedian? And so, yeah, even when we started the podcast, so it was with another comedian, Ward Anderson. And then after we had done a bunch of episodes, he's like, I want to approach Sirius. And I was like, sure, go nuts. But if it had been up to me, I would not have done it. And I didn't think it would go anywhere. And so I have to give kudos to him on that. I think now I have become the type of person that will reach out and does, or at least feels more worthy and capable. But for a long time, I absolutely, and especially in comedy, I was waiting for an invitation that never came.
Yeah. You know, I want to ask you about stand-up, because you were an actor at one point and then you switched over to doing stand-up comedy, right? Mm-hmm. So I think what's really interesting about, you know, the industry being male-dominated is that I find, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that often the jokes are made at the expense of women, right? And I want to qualify that, because it's not that they are jokes about sex or jokes about dating. And I think those are fine. But I think what I notice is that men go sometimes male comedians go beyond that and they make jokes at the expense of women. Like, you know, when Louis C.K. doesn't just talk about dating, but he talks about rape jokes, right? I mean, is that something that you think that male comedians are pressured to do?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they're pressured to do it. It's interesting. I think comedy is almost in many ways reflective of the rest of society. So there are some men in the industry that are woke. They're paying attention. They're allies. They're on board. And then there's some guys who, you know, just sort of don't get it and are paying attention. And then there are some guys that honestly think this is hilarious and they don't care. And so, like, whatever the different kind of groups are within society, I think you see that reflected in comedy. And I think there is a big thing right now. There is a strain in comedy of people who really resist the idea of being PC. So they see anyone who has an issue with one of their jokes about women or with the way they tell a joke or the subject of a joke, they just see that as like, oh, someone's trying to PC me, instead of recognizing like, oh man, what I'm saying is not cool. And so it's a difficult conversation even to have within the comedy community, because you come up against some really strong opinions and some really aggressive opinions. And it's not always, in fact, it's very rarely, I feel, a productive conversation because you're either talking to people who get it or people who don't. And I think there have been a few times where these conversations have led to someone going like, oh, I didn't see it from that perspective and now I do. But I also think that a lot of the people who tell jokes that are offensive or hurtful, they already know that and they're fine with it.
Yeah, it's a really fine line and it's something that's really hard to articulate because it's not about policing language or keeping, you know, comedy clean and keeping, you know, sex out of comedy or dating jokes out of comedy. But like on one of your tracks is called Boobs, mm-hmm. right? Which I thought was really funny. I like that track, by the way.
Thank you.
And it's about telling a joke about women that's funny than telling a joke about women that could potentially be harmful. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And you can talk about sex and you can still be funny and you can still even be raunchy, but you don't necessarily have to talk about things that are harmful about women like rape culture. You know what I mean? Or like Louis C.K., like making jokes about masturbating in front of women. Do you know?
Yes. Yes. And that's the thing is that the intention behind the joke is very important. And that's one of the nuances that people don't get sometimes. And so I do kind of distance myself from the idea that, you know, people are like, rape jokes are never acceptable. And usually they're not. But there are some great writers out there who have made jokes where you're not minimizing rape and you're not glorifying rape. But the person who is going to be offended by the joke is the rapist. You know what I mean? And so it's very difficult to take on a subject like that and be punching up and not punching down. And that is the trick. What I always say is that the thing is with these very delicate subjects, you have to be an amazing writer and you have to craft a very specific joke. And quite frankly, 90% of comedians probably don't have the skill. And so a lot of the people you see doing these jokes, it's like, no, you can't handle this subject. You just don't know it. And so nothing is off limits in comedy. I honestly believe that, but I believe that some subjects, listen, you got to be in the top 10% to tackle that subject and honestly be funny and not be hurting people and not being offensive. So maybe the rule is no rape jokes. Maybe, you know, or you run it by 100 people first. And if every one of them goes, you know what? You made a great point and it was thought provoking, but I also laughed. Then go nuts. Or if something you're going to say is going to wound an entire group of people, why do you want to be that guy?
Yeah. I could go on and on about this because I was thinking that when you said that you have to be in the top 10%, you know, I mean, people have called Louis C.K. a genius, right? And, right. You know, you would think, yeah, you know, but anyway.
Listen, just and in some ways, like, the problem is that once you get called, he's an example of how a man will get called a genius. And then even if he starts to slip, he's still a genius. Right. And women won't get that same kind of privilege in comedy. And so with Louis C.K., I saw him like maybe a year before the public Me Tooing of him. And I had already heard these rumors and I didn't want to go to the show. There's a whole long story, but I'm still a garbage fire because I went. And someone actually in the audience from my work that I was with said to me, someone just told me about this rumor. Do you think it's true? And I said, yeah, I for sure think it's true. And I'm like, I've heard it as well. And also being in comedy, he's not the only one doing this shit, you know, and he is the one that's been outed so far, but it's still difficult. And as we can see, he's back working, right? He's fine. And so it's still very difficult to speak out. And the comedy culture and the comedy community is difficult to speak out about this because comics will rally around him. But that happens on every level. But that show that I was at, he was markedly different. And before, what he did that was great is he had this like, who cares kind of mentality. And so the way he approached everything was kind of like, oh my God, why are we making big deals out of this stuff? And like, kids are assholes and we should be able to say that. But all of a sudden, his demeanor on stage had changed a lot and he was wearing a suit, which he did have to address. And he was like, I'm going to be this guy from now on. And as an audience member, I was like, why? No one has ever wanted you to put on a suit. Like, but anyway, But at this time, his kind of anger or his like bitterness that before, because he had more of a like, who cares? We all need to calm down kind of delivery, even though he was saying these things that were negative or bitter. But that time I saw him, it wasn't as flippant as he had been in the past. And I've seen him in the past as well. It wasn't as flippant. There was like, it seemed like there was some vitriol in it. And it changed the delivery. So I've already heard the rumors. Some people have already heard the rumors. It hasn't publicly come out yet. But he also did like 30 minutes about masturbating. And so that was weird. But on top of that, look, I can handle jokes about masturbating from pretty much anyone. But at this point, they've all been told, so it's got to be great. And what he used to do was take topics that everyone had done, like kids, and put a new spin on it. And he wasn't doing that. And so to me, he stopped being a genius before this came out. But people are going to call him a comedic genius for the rest of his life. And so should he be trusted with these subjects? Not anymore. Was there a time when he could have been? Maybe. But he also has been that guy that wants to say the thing that's shocking. And I think he used to be able to temper that with his delivery. But now I think he's become this weird, angry man.
Yeah. You know, what I've read from the recent sets, you're right. I mean, they are vitriolic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know this was before everything came out, but you're right. They seem defensive. And, you know, how dare you hold me to the standard? Yeah.
Well, and I think though it was before this stuff came out, I think he was already on this weird road and that this stuff has just only exacerbated it. That's a hard word. Exacerbated it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, you know what's interesting when you were saying that, and I know this seems really obvious, but sometimes the most obvious things are the ones we need to address. I don't think that I have ever heard anyone describe a woman comedian as genius. Mm-hmm. Or going a step further, I rarely hear people describe women in any creative field as genius. Is that?
Yeah. I mean, until they die. Once they're dead, people will be like, genius. You know, Lucille Ball, genius. Penny Marshall, genius. But no, in terms of, especially not in comedy and not in like the popular zeitgeist, right? Like I call people geniuses all the time, but we're talking about like many people will acknowledge, you know, people feel like George Carlin, genius, Richard Pryor, genius. But you don't hear that particular word associated with a lot of women comedians.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Kristen Wiig of SNL and, you know, Leslie Jones and Wanda Sykes. I mean, totally. Genius, right? They're all genius.
Yeah, Kate McKinnon, what? She is, I don't even understand how she's a human person. She's so good. And,
oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, they exist. And they're out there, and there's so many women. I'll tell you right now who I have to name drop, and I know she's quite well known, but Maria Bamford just continues to like gets better. She gets smarter. She gets more in depth. Like she is such a comedic genius, and I understand that her brand of look humor is subjective. She's definitely not going to be for everyone, but I feel like every album, every special, every TV show, I fall more in love with her. And to me, the idea that, yes, she is not constantly being thrown parades is unacceptable.
I don't know this person.
You know Maria Bamford? I just changed your life. You're going to have the best time now.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for not, you know, saying like, how do you not know this person? And thank you.
No, because now I'm actually a little bit jealous of you because I'm like, you have so much to look forward to.
That's right. My whole life is ahead of me.
Yeah.
So tell me, so how do the women that are with your record label now, how have they described this experience? Like, are they elated? Are they saying, you know, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me? You know, my life has changed now.
You know what? They're not quite as effusive as that. And now I'm angry at them for that. But what I think the most common thing I've heard is I wouldn't have done this without you, which is there you go. Like, that's all I need. I think it's just that, first of all, there are things that I'm doing with the label. And in the beginning, the question you asked me about why I started it, and there are 1,000 layers to it. But the thing I do differently with this label than like the culture of comedy in Canada is I try to be very, very supportive. But I also in Canada, everyone is, if you play with me, you can't play with other people. So for instance, there's like one club chain. If you work for them, you can't play any other clubs. You have to only work for their chain. And like every chain is kind of like that. which means in a country where we already don't have a lot of opportunity because we're a big country with a very small population, it means that it's very difficult to make a living. And so this kind of it's me or them mentality is one thing that I've actively refused to do with the record label. So every person who works with me, they're only signed with me for this one record. This is a project we're going to work on together. And the artist is going to know that it's because I value them. I think they're funny. I think they should have content out in the world. I think they should have, you know, merchandise for their audiences to show support. And then after this is over, if they want to work with someone else, I will continue to support them and to be happy for them and be thrilled to do it. And I'm transparent. Like, they can look at all the books. Everyone gets the same deal. Everyone is treated the same. And again, that is not the case in the industry as a whole. And so it's just trying to really value comedians because it, certainly in this country, we have devalued them to the point that it's ridiculous. Basically, comics are treated like they're a dime a dozen. And this is an art form in its way. This is someone's storytelling, someone's interpretation of the world that we're in. Laughter is the best thing that ever happened. So they know now when I give them that permission, I tell them, yes, you are good enough. Yes, this is funny enough. I support you. I'm going to work really hard for you and I'm going to be honored to do it. But you don't owe me anything. This is a transaction. And at the end of this, if you don't want to work with me anymore, I am not going to hold it against you. I am not going to be angry at you. I'm still going to be happy to see where your career goes. And that's it.
Yeah, that's really excellent. I could see how that could reverberate through their entire careers because I would imagine, you know, like we talked about, you know, often these women don't have many opportunities to begin with. You know what I mean? You know, so you giving them permission to go out and, you know, be their best selves and to, you know, get as many deals as they can must be really meaningful. So,
yeah, I think that my whole thing is and in Canada, we're bad for not appreciating our artists while they're here. Especially in comedy, we seem to have this attitude of like, if you're so good, why didn't you go to the States? Which is ridiculous and frustrating. And we don't have a star system in Canada, and we should. And we have this weird ingrained thing from generations ago that because we're next door to Hollywood, our stories aren't good. And don't get me wrong, I think there's room for both. And I completely understand why so many Canadians go to the States when they're in entertainment. I get it, but I would love for us to have an alternative here or for them to be able to do both and for them to at least start being celebrated while they're here. And so that is another culture that I'm kind of fighting against is going, no, just because you didn't pay $10,000 to get a green card doesn't mean you're not funny and you shouldn't have an album and you shouldn't be celebrated and all of those things. I'm hoping that with these albums that we're putting out and the change that we're trying to make, at least audiences will start to recognize like, oh yeah, we don't have to wait for these people to leave before we start seeing their work or getting on board with it. We can get on board with it now. And we can be excited and proud of them now instead of waiting until they get big in the States and then being like, you know, Jim Carrey's Canadian though, right? Because that's what we usually do.
You know, I first of all, I want to apologize on behalf of my country for taking your comedians. I know we have a lot to apologize for.
No, but listen, this one's not on you, man. This one's fully on Canada because we decided you guys are better than us when it comes to entertainment. We accepted that. We let our own like false humility, because I'll be honest with you, overall, and no one wants me to tell you guys this, but overall, we think Canada is better than the US.
Oh, really?
It's a secret we've been keeping for a long time. But for some reason, when it comes to entertainment, we go, oh, but is it a Canadian thing? And we don't want to like it till it goes away. It's gross. And that has to change.
Yeah, but you know, to play devil's advocate, I mean, do you really blame them? I mean, because you know, our administration now, you've got a lot of material here in the States.
Right. That is true. That is true. The one thing I will say actually that is frustrating is that it is very easy for American stand-up comics to come and do shows in Canada. I think they have to pay like $100 and there's no real heavy paperwork. And so we are losing the few jobs that we do have to do live stand-up here in Canada. We're actually losing out to American comics, but we can't go and do shows in the States unless we actually have a full-blown green card.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So it's like in the trade agreement, it would be great if your guy and our guy could, but your guy is not going to ease up on that. He does not want people coming in. So that is one beef I do have.
They don't talk anymore, I don't think.
I know. But to be fair, that was already in practice before your current guy manifested the presidency. I mean, I'm not sure how that happened, but I'm going to go with manifested.
That's the first time I've ever heard manifested. Yeah, that's true. What's that book, The Secret? Yeah, yes. He read The Secret and he did mantras every night. Anyway, serious note. So, you know, I always thought that, first of all, I admire you for moving from, you know, being an actor to comedy, because I always thought that men thought that funny women were emasculating. Is that true? Like, I don't understand that connection, but I get the sense that they feel that it's emasculating.
Yes. Yes, they do. Men always say, I want a woman with a good sense of humor. And what they mean is, I want a woman who laughs at my jokes. Obviously, that's not, I'm generalizing, but that is what I have found. You'll find that a lot of heterosexual female comics date within the comedy community. And people will be like, oh, don't date comics, it's the worst. And it's like, well, you know what? There's not a lot of people outside of comedy that really understand a woman that wants to do this necessarily. And so it can be a little bit difficult. And obviously, there's many women that do end up finding someone who gets it, but it can be challenging. I never would have done it was it not for the support and borderline coercion of my brother, who is also a stand-up comic, was in it before I was, and really for about 3 years straight kind of kept being like, you have to do this, you have to. And I never thought I was funny. And he bugged me until finally I was like, okay, I'll do one open mic. And then that went pretty well. And that basically is the kiss of death, because once you get a taste of making people laugh, it's that's the best drug ever. And so then I was in the game. And the difference between acting and stand-up, you can do any night of the week. You don't need anybody else. I mean, you need the audience, but you don't need a cast. You don't need a director. You don't need a writer. It's all you. And you can just any day walk out and there's going to be a show going on somewhere and you can get on stage. Whereas with acting, it's a lot of waiting a lot of the time. And what eventually happened is I ended up, through life issues and stuff like that, pretty much just transitioning into comedy being my focus. And then I was stuck.
Yeah, I can imagine. It must be like, you know, when I make my friends laugh, of course, it's addicting. But it must be also like baking. You know, you bake a really good cake and everyone tells you, you know, that you're a baking genius. And then you're addicted to it and you're baking all the time. And then you end up eating them. And then, you know.
It's, it's it's a weird. Sorry. No, that's great. It's making strangers laugh. First of all, when people are always talk about comics, it's like, obviously we're all a little bit crazy, because standing up in front of a bunch of strangers and trying to make them laugh is like the worst. Why would we want to do that? It's gross and impossible. And then when you do it and it works, oh man, it feels so good. And like nothing feels like when you kill, it's the best feeling in the world. And you know what, like when you bomb, like the first time you bomb, it's the worst feeling ever, but then you start craving the laugh. So you go back, and bombing after a while, it doesn't hurt as much. And then you get used to it, but killing never stops feeling good.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It does remind me of my kid, who's pretty funny. I've got a really, really funny kid. He's just 7. And, you know, I can see it in him. Like, he knows when he can get a laugh. Right. Mm-hmm. And what's really sad is that, like, when he bombs, you know, for a 7-year-old, like, he just keeps trying. Right. He'll just tell the same joke over and over again. And I'll say, you know, sweetie, you told that one like 3 times, but he wants that laughter. Like, he wants that audience. Anyway, it's just really funny.
That's very interesting. And you know what? There are some comedians that will tell that joke until they die, even though no one laughs.
But he just tells it like 5 minutes, like, you know, he told it like 2 minutes ago. He'll just come back. He'll just leave the room. Mm-hmm. Thinks that maybe you've forgotten. Because he's seven.
Yeah.
You know, and he comes back 2 minutes later like, hey, I've got a joke for you. I was like, this is just 60 seconds ago. You just
I love it.
Anyway. So what projects are you excited about? What is coming up for Howl and Roar?
Well, we've got our first two albums are out. They are House Arrest by Kate Davis and Fart Monster by Jillian English. Yeah, that title is winning a lot of hearts, for sure. So they're both great. And then our next album, which is going to be coming out probably end of February, Kyle Brownrigg. He's our first boy on the label. And it's interesting because when it comes to men in the queer community, there's not a lot of material being played on the various outlets. And here in Canada, there's not a ton of headliners that are men in the queer community. So it's another demographic that has unique challenges in this industry. And so Kyle's album, Unmedicated, is our next one. And then we've got every month, pretty much, doing another recording. So hopefully we're going to have 12 albums out this year.
Wow. That's a lot.
It is. And some people are like, you should put out less. And I'm like, you know, here's the problem. Again, I've got people now, mercifully, I've got people coming out of the woodwork that want to work with me. And the challenge is, I don't want to say no to anybody. The rule is, and this is from my sound engineer, one recording a month. And we're not going to stray from that. But I feel like, again, there are so many people, like, this country is on a backlog of women who haven't recorded. So I can't see the well running dry anytime soon.
Well, Allison Dorr, thank you so much for joining me. I love talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on iTunes and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, have you checked out the Electorate store lately? There are some really well-designed and eye-catching merch there. My favorite is the Elect Women Coffee Cup. It's perfect for the primaries. Just go to electorate.com and click on the store link in the top menu. Lastly, please visit the Electorate on social media. That's at Electorate on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Until next time, keep up the good fight.